Hey, what's up, everybody? Straight out of Marigold Studios. This is the Unpolished Podcast, and we're discovering life one record at a time. I am your host, the sometimes hateable and sometimes huggable, but always unpolished Paul Moreno. It is good to be back with you. Hey, last week I had a kind of a bye week. I decided to take the week off. We went to a charity event out in Fort Worth. We drove up to Fort Worth to visit our good friends Richard and Barbie. Yes, that is her real name. And so we went out there to visit them and have a good time with them. So we always have a great time, my wife and I. Every time we go with them, it's just nice that the way I explained it to Richard was, it was nice just to go be with people that I didn't feel like I had to entertain, and I didn't feel like they were entertaining us. We just hang out. We just go. So whatever they do, we do. If they're hanging out watching TV at home, that's what we're doing. If they decide, hey, we feel like eating out today instead of cooking, then that's what we're doing. So whatever, if we're having cereal, if we're having pancakes, if we're having, actually we never have any of those things. We have bacon and eggs. That's what we had. So that was good. And they make a good cup of Joe, as they say. So it was fun. It was fun. But today we're getting right into it. I want to just say something really quick. I'm going to be talking about some stuff. This is going to be it can be kind of touchy. I just want, you know, because of the mood of where we're going, I like being upbeat. I like being, but I also know that we touch on some heavy subjects. We touch on mental health. We touch on rights and privilege and all kinds of things that some maybe political in nature, some maybe, and it's not our goal. It's just what it is. When you talk about life, you talk about all aspects of life. The other thing that I want to talk about is just before we get into it, I'm not trying to be in a certain category of podcasts. And what I mean by that, just kind of sitting and reflecting and taking this week off. And I like to do that. I like to take random times off, just, you know, just kind of sometimes planned, sometimes unplanned, but and really do nothing else but think and really question myself. I'm a big believer in self-questioning. If you can't stop and question yourself, then who can question you? And so that's what I do. I just sit and I ponder. And a lot of times I ponder, you know, hey, what am I doing? But most of the time I sit and try to answer the question, why? Why am I doing this? Why do I get up every morning and work on Marigold Studio? Why do I do that? What is pushing me to do that? Is it just to have a shell? Is it just to have a building to call home? Or is there something more to it? Like, why do I want to do this? What pushes me to keep going? And it's important to ask the question. So that's one of the questions. You know, why do I do it? Why did I quit my job to do this? Why am I not working right now in that capacity of going back to a roofing company or, you know, stuff like that? Why am I doing this? Why do I choose to work for a non-profit? Why do I choose to work at, you know, really at the mercies of those who would believe in what we're doing and donate towards it? Why did I put myself in this predicament? And it comes down to this. It really comes down to the idea, and in our opening line that we talk about in the podcast every week, which is discovering life one record at a time. Now, when I talk about discovering life, I'm talking way more than just life's issues. I'm really talking about life. I'm talking about true life. I'm talking about eternal life. Now, I'm not looking to find eternal life in any given record, whether it be a Nirvana record, whether it be a Pearl Jam record, whether it be a rap record, a hip-hop record, a heavy metal record. That's not what this is about. What it does do is is it in looking at what people write and the art that people create in music, because music is art. It's an expression. And in this artistic expression, when you have someone articulating their life, articulating where they're from, where they're at, where they're headed, it has to bring into it this idea of eternal life. None of us are going to be here, you know, in our present state eternally. Everyone, no matter how successful you are, no matter how sexy you are, no matter how successful you are, whether you sell 1,000 records or go multi-platinum, whether you work for a nonprofit or you bring in millions of dollars and live on a, you know, fancy house on a hill or something, whatever that is, it doesn't matter. You die. You can't outpace death. We all come to death, right? We've talked about it before that we create these worldviews by answering four questions, right? Origin, meaning, morality, destiny. Where did I come from? Why am I here? What is right and wrong? And where do I go when it's all done? Right? The way I answer those four questions is it determines my worldview, right? My goal is to have a biblical worldview. I want the Bible to tell me where I came from, why I'm here, what is right and what is wrong, and then where I'm going. But in no matter what worldview you have, the ultimate two questions that are going to be answered through that worldview is about death and evil. It answers those two questions, or it fails to answer those two questions, one of the two. But it's going to answer the question of why do we die? Science can tell us how we die all day long. No one can tell us why, except the Bible. The Bible will tell you why you die and I die. The Bible will tell us why there's death on earth. There was never meant to be death on earth, ever. But the Bible tells us why there's death. So that is a biblical worldview on death. It also has a worldview, or there's a worldview, a biblical worldview on evil. And so these are the things that really are the ultimate questions in life. And that's why we want to talk about life. We want to talk about eternal life. And we believe 100% that life, eternal life, cannot be found outside of Jesus. That is the purpose of this podcast. I hope it's fun and entertaining to hear about these stories of bands and musicians and records, but ultimately that is the goal, is to introduce life. I'll break the ice every week. Because I love talking about records. It's not a ruse. I talk about music all the time. I can't help myself sometimes. It's ridiculous. Sometimes literally in the middle of a conversation, I will say, how in the world did we start talking about music? And I'll be backtracking like the conversation and like, who brought this up? Oh yeah, it was me. I don't know how we got on this subject, but we did. So while we're here, let's spit out some random facts. And that's just the way my life is, but it is what it is. Today we're talking about a song by Tupac Shakur, Hit 'Em Up. I know you've heard this song. Maybe you have. I think you have. If you were a teenager in the 1990s, you heard this song, Hit 'Em Up. Now, we'll get into that in just a little bit, but I want to talk about all this because of what is going on with the grand jury and surrounding Dwayne Keefe D. Davis and his arrest in the recent couple of weeks, and then what's coming out of all of this. But it all has to do with the murder of Tupac Shakur. And so this, of course, the murder took place in 1997. Tupac Shakur was shot several times in September 7th of 1996. Excuse me, I said 1997. I meant September 7th, 1996, but he was shot in Las Vegas after watching the Mike Tyson boxing match at the MGM Grand. And he died 6 days later, which was September 13th, 1996. So he actually lived almost a whole week. I know he had one of his lungs removed. There was a lot of stuff going on to try to save his life, but it was too much. I know there was internal bleeding and all that, and I don't want to get into all the specifics of it. But after the match, after the boxing match, Tupac and then Death Row Record CEO Suge Knight and a group of people with him encountered a man by the name of Orlando Anderson. Now, Orlando Anderson was a member of the Southside Compton Crips, and they encountered him in the hotel casino. And Tupac is said to have initiated a fight with Mr. Anderson by going up and hitting him and really like just kind of just blindsiding the guy. And then Mr. Anderson, Orlando Anderson, was jumped by those that were surrounding Tupac at the time. Now, apparently, it was retaliation for members of the Southside Compton Crips assaulting members of the Mob Piru Bloods, two rival gangs in California, within the days leading up to the match. In the act of the assault, a necklace containing a Death Row Records medallion belonged to a man by the name of Trayvon Lane. Now, Mr. Lane was a Mob Piru Bloods member and a close friend of Suge Knight. Now, Suge Knight was CEO of Death Row Records, and that's who Tupac Shakur was signed to, was Death Row Records. And you'll recognize it, Death Row Records. That's where we got Dr. Dre when he went solo, when you had Snoop Dogg and coming out, and that was all you always heard them talking about, Death Row Records. In fact, just I believe it was last year or the year before, Snoop Dogg actually took ownership or purchased ownership of Death Row Records. But anyway, the chain and the medallion that was stolen from Trayvon Lane was kind of an honorable thing to wear within that community. So taking it was a huge show of respect. So what it was a gold chain, and on this gold chain was the Death Row Records logo, but of course it was embellished with gold and diamonds. And so it was just this thing that within Death Row that, like, hey, this is a big deal. And so witnesses said that it was Orlando Anderson's intention to fight Tupac Shakur at some time, but after being jumped in the casino by Tupac and his group, it morphed into something, you know, far more serious. And then moments later, a final picture was taken of Tupac Shakur by a fan driving alongside Suge Knight's BMW, with Tupac in the front passenger seat and Suge Knight in the driver's seat. Now, shortly after the photo was taken, shots rang out from a white Cadillac that came from behind and pulled up next to Tupac's vehicle on the passenger side. And then four people were in that white Cadillac. Terrence Brown was driving, DeAndre Smith and Orlando Anderson were in the rear passenger seats, and Dwayne Keefe D. Davis was in the front passenger seat. Now, Keefe D was a ranking member and a shot caller in the South Compton Crips. Now, crime scene photos, you know, will show bullet holes in the passenger side doors of Tupac's vehicles. I think eight in the door itself, and then not counting the ones that actually went through the side glass and I believe those are the ones that actually hit Tupac. It wasn't I think the door actually stopped those bullets, but the ones that went through the windshield or the side window there are the ones that hit Tupac. But Keefe D is described the scene of the shooting by stating that as soon as the shots began to ring out, Tupac tried jumping into the back seat, but he was already shot multiple times. It happened so fast. But over the course of the next several days, in what has been referred to as the 10-day war, there were a number of shootings in Compton linked back to the to basically a retaliation for the shooting of Tupac Shakur between the Crips and the Bloods. So for 10 days, there was this just bloody back and forth, you know, just of retaliation back and forth. But it was 6 days after the incident in Las Vegas that Tupac Shakur finally succumbed to the wounds and died in the hospital. Now, most of us have heard of this whole thing described as an kind of an East Coast versus West Coast rivalry, which is true in some respects, but you know, in a lot of respects, it was mostly blown out of proportion because of the feud between Sean Puffy Combs, you know, P. Diddy, or whatever he's gone through so many names, but because he had Bad Boy Records, which was located on the East Coast. And then Suge Knight had Death Row Records, which was located on the West Coast. So that became like East Coast, West Coast. But it was really Bad Boy Records versus Death Row Records. And really, it wasn't the whole record company. It was just like a few players within each one, kind of rivals. Now, had they been maybe in the same area, you know, maybe if Death Row Records and Bad Boy Records were both, you know, in from the East Coast or both from the West Coast, maybe it wouldn't be like that, and maybe it wouldn't have had such a big swell. But, you know, I mean, it had a ring to it, East Coast versus West Coast. And, how, you know, but then again, the South Side Compton Crips and the Mob Piru Bloods were both from Compton, California. So, I mean, how do you get that and then morph that into East versus West when, you know, those are both West Coast. They're both California, Compton. But the answer is, I mean, kind of simple. In like how does the Crips from Compton get involved with, you know, Bad Boy Records, which is out of New York? Well, Keefe D and his nephew Orlando Anderson were part of the Crips. And whenever Bad Boy Records came to the West Coast, these two men were in charge of their security. So Suge Knight, the CEO of Death Row Records, was a member of the Bloods, the Mob Piru Bloods. So that's where you had that rivalry. So it's like, it's just these layers of, you know, beyond a rivalry. I mean, this was life and death here, right? Now, what's interesting in this, this is 1996, September 1996, when all this goes down. But by this time in Tupac's career, I mean, this is why it was such a big deal. No, I admittedly was not big in the rap scene at this time. You know, I'm still grieving Kurt Cobain's death and the potential death of grunge music as I knew it. And so, you know, rap or gangster rap, I mean, I knew about it. I mean, I was an MTV guy. So at that time, in case you didn't know, MTV actually did play music. And so, you know, a lot of rap. You had, you know, Snoop Dogg was, you know, completely off the charts. Dr. Dre were just blowing things up. I mean, they were just amazing. So this whole Bad Boy Records and Death Row Records, I mean, this was big stuff. Biggie was huge. You had all these guys that were really, really, I mean, really doing new things with rap. But then you had it layered with all this, you know, which side are you on? Well, I'm from Texas. I'm not East Coast or West Coast. But there was still always that kind of a pushing to, like, hey, which side with, you know, are you an East Coast guy or a West Coast guy? Well, I'm a southern border guy. I don't know, like, where do I fit in? But I remember, even as a teenager at that time, being asked the question, so who are you with? And it's almost like you had to answer the question, or you felt like you had, as a kid, you just felt like, well, I don't know, which side do I pick? I mean, it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous how blown out of proportion this all was. But by this time, you know, Tupac is like multi-platinum. I mean, he's multi-platinum. And not only that, he's a movie star. Now, he's starred in Poetic Justice. You have Juice. You have him in some other movies. So he's now got this name recognition in not only the rap world and the music world, because, I mean, he was really a likable guy. When you saw him, he had such a personality. You couldn't help but be drawn to the guy. He was just that larger than life character. And then to be a movie star on top of that. Now, and he was only 25 years old. When he died, he was 25 years old. Tupac was 25. Let that sink in. Well, let's just go over the kind of like the timeline, because that's just the whole Crips versus Bloods. That's all that part of it. That's not to mention this other thing, because like I said, there was a couple of players in Bad Boy Records, couple of players in Death Row Records that were just going at each other with this. And in 1994, so November of 94, Tupac is in New York. He's in New York City, and he's in the lobby of Quad Studios. And at the time, Biggie's there. They're recording some stuff. They got some other stuff going on. Puffy's there. And Tupac is shot in the lobby. Apparently, it was kind of a robbery gone bad. And he's shot 5 times and left for dead. Well, he doesn't die. They do rob him. They steal his, I don't know if it was cash. And I know there was jewelry involved, something like $40,000 worth of jewelry or cash. But he's shot 5 times. Well, this is in November of 1994. Tupac believes that Puffy is behind it, that Notorious B.I.G. is behind it, which is, you know, Biggie Smalls, that somehow they have something to do with it. Either they had something to do with it in the sense of causing it, or they knew about it and didn't do anything, or they found out it was about to happen and just let it happen. But he really blamed. Now, up until around this point, Biggie and Tupac are friends. Like, they're all friends, right? These guys are friends. This is, and like I said, this is November of 94. So these guys are friends. These guys are guys that will rap together and hang out together and do all this together. Now, this everything that happens in here goes completely awry. So this happens in November of 94. In February of 95, Biggie Smalls releases a song called Who Shot Ya? Now, Who Shot Ya, according to Biggie Smalls, had nothing to do with Tupac. It was written before that shooting. It was about two rival drug dealers or something in a court, you know, just it was a story being told through this rap song. That's not how Tupac took it. Tupac took it as a diss towards him. Like, hey, who shot you? Like, just, hey, just throwing it out there. So the following year, in June of 96, Tupac releases a song called Hit 'Em Up. It was a B-side, but it had a music video. And the music video and the song itself is a complete diss track against Biggie Smalls, against Bad Boy Records, against anyone that is on the East Coast or supports the East Coast or Bad Boy Records. I mean, it goes on and on. I'm not going to read the lyrics. You can read them for yourself. It's called Tupac Shakur's Hit 'Em Up. It's called Hit 'Em Up. And you can read it or listen or read the lyrics or listen to it if you so may. It's got a lot of cursing. I'm going to do a lot of profanity in it. But he's making some, I mean, he names names. There's no names named in Who Shot Ya from Biggie Smalls. Tupac names names. I mean, he is calling people out. He is threatening their death. If you come, we're killing you. We're going to kill people from Big Boy Records. I mean, he goes off, or Bad Boy Records. He goes off. And it's crazy. And it starts this, it just continues. I don't want to say it starts it, but it just continues this rivalry. And then you have Tupac has signed with Suge Knight. Suge Knight is bona fide thug, right? Yes, he's the CEO of Death Row Records at the time, but this guy is a thug first. And then, so you have this exit even before the killing of Tupac. You have the exit of Dre. You have the exit of Snoop Dogg from Death Row Records. And then you have Aftermath, which is the record company that Dre starts. But yeah, they're done with this stuff. They're done with the drama that's happening within Death Row Records. And Tupac is now just, I mean, he is really joined at the hip with Suge Knight. And Suge Knight has no business, really, honestly, being the number one influence or such a big influence with Tupac. And of course, it cost him his life. And I won't say it's just Suge Knight. I'm not casting just blame. There's just so much to do. But Suge Knight and Tupac, just decision, bad decision, one after the other in all of this stuff. And it all came down to retaliation. Who's going to pay back who for what? Now, there's been a lot of conspiracy theories that have come out since the killing, since the shooting. You have, and mind you, I'm not here to say none of it is true, or it's just a matter of, you know, as they say, it's not what's true, it's what you can prove, right? It's not what happened, it's what you can prove what happened as far as the law of the land is concerned. You know what I mean? And so there's a lot of conspiracy theories of, you know, hey, Puff put out a $1 million hit, whatever. You know, there was that. There was the cops are actually the ones that wanted Tupac dead. And there was a lot of cover up. I believe that there was a lot of cover up. I don't know. Foul play before, I don't know, but maybe foul play after, you know, because you have Las Vegas really wants to keep their reputation. You know, they're in the 90s, they went family friendly in a lot of ways. And they're like, man, we don't want this. We don't want to mess up our, you know, our new image we're trying to create. And so, you know, I there's a lot of that. And a lot of that may be true, but just a lot of cover-up stories, a lot of, you know, who did what, and it's just crazy. There's so many layers to this, and it reminds me a lot. I brought up Kurt Cobain earlier, but it does remind me a lot of that. And the conspiracy theories are usually born out of, you know, I'm just not being sure, and maybe it's just too simple. Like in the case of Kurt Cobain, maybe it was just too simple to say this guy got heavy into heroin, lost his mind, lost his facilities for making decisions, and put a gun in his head or a gun in his mouth and blew the back of his head off. Maybe that's too easy. So maybe we can blame his wife. Maybe we can have some conspiracy theory. Maybe we can blame someone else. Or, you know, oh, the babysitter this, or, you know, or maybe he's not dead, you know, like we did with Elvis, like we do with John Lennon or anyone else. Like maybe they're actually not dead. Maybe it was just their way of getting out from under the pressure. All conspiracy theories. Well, the same kind of conspiracy theories came up with Tupac. Well, maybe he's not really dead. Maybe this was just his escape. Maybe he knew it was the end because of this whole Bloods versus Crips, East Coast, West Coast thing. Maybe he knew it had gone too far. But these are all conspiracy theories. And there's not a whole lot of truth to them. And it really comes down to what you can prove. And that's why it's taken 27 years before anyone's been arrested in the murder of Tupac. And then you have this other layer of the Crips versus the Bloods. You have the Bad Boy Records versus Death Row Records. I mean, there's just all of this going on. And honestly, here we are nearly three decades later, what really came of all this? I mean, so much blood was shed. And that goes even beyond what we know, in the sense of, I remember, like I said, I'm a Texas boy, but I remember just the anger that was that and the rage being portrayed. I mean, just if you hear Hit 'Em Up, beyond just reading the lyrics, if you just hear the last 30 seconds of that song, if you have any bit of anger in you at all, especially as a young man, especially as a teenage boy, or any if you have any kind of dad issues, maybe dad's not around, you have any kind of beef with anybody, and you listen to that last 30 seconds, I'm going to tell you, it could push you to kill a man. It is so laced with hatred and malice. And how many young men that were not, it wasn't an East Coast, West Coast. It was beyond a September of 1996 or 10-day war in Compton. I'm talking throughout the United States, that people heard that and it fueled their anger. It fueled their malice. It fueled their hate. Maybe taking it to killing or hurting or maiming someone else. And what did we get out of it all? What did the songs do? What did Hit 'Em Up do that was positive? You have to understand, Tupac was probably, I mean, just one of the most talented young men in the mid-90s. And I don't think it's a stretch, just with the way his charisma, his on-screen presence that he brought in acting, his look, the way he carried himself, the image beyond the gangster image, beyond the thug image. We'd be talking about him today the way we look and talk about maybe Denzel Washington. And Denzel Washington is one of my favorite actors of all time. But the way I believe, if he could have just gotten past that, I mean, basically it was like a grown-up kid, 25 years old. I'm 43 years old today. I'm not saying 25 years old, you're a kid. I look at myself at 25 years old. At 25 years old, I'm a dad. And I have two children by the time I'm 25. I have my son, Paul Jr., and then I have my daughter, Rayanne. And so this is all before I'm 25 years old. Before I'm 30, I have four children. I have all four of my children. But I'm looking at myself at 25 years old. Yeah, I carried myself as a man. I had a full-time job. I had a family to take care of. I had a roof over my head. I had wheels under my feet. My kids had to have clothes on their back and Pampers on their bottoms and food in their stomach and the whole nine. So yeah, very much a man at 25. But 43-year-old me looks at 25-year-old me and says, boy, you had a lot to learn. Your life had really just begun. And I hope to look back 20 years from now at 43-year-old me and be in my mid-60s looking back on days like today and say, man, you've come a long way. Yeah, you still had to do the man stuff. You were a provider. You were a protector. But man, you've come a long way. But I look at a 25-year-old. My stepson is older than 25. I mean, you look at Christopher Wallace or Biggie Smalls. He's killed in March of 97. So, I mean, this is 6 months. 6 months after Tupac is killed, Biggie Smalls, Notorious B.I.G., he's killed. 24 years old. I mean, it's just absolutely wild. Another great, great rapper. Where would they be today? Where would they be today? 27 years later and 26 years later, respectively. Where would they be today? In their 50s. They would be in their early 50s. Tupac talked a lot about change, making change, social change, not just looking at young black men as just thugs anymore. He was a well-read individual. That's why he could rap on so many different levels, because he was an avid reader and learner. I mean, he had an open mind about things. I'm not saying that he was the end all be all, but my goodness, what a waste. But what did we get out of all of it? All the retaliation, all the hatred, all the shooting back and forth, all the pointing of fingers. All we got was dead black men. And those are the ones that I'm talking about. Those are all, and all of this, it's like we didn't want to recognize it for what it was, which was, it was gang violence. And when this gang violence, the Crips and the Bloods, what kind of violence? This was black on black violence. It was the biggest waste of life. And nothing good came of it. What good ever comes from men and women taking on vengeance? You look, and this is not like a new thing. This is not something that's happened in the last 25 years, the last 50 years, the last 100 years. You talk about, you read it from the beginning of time. Any time that we take wrath, that we take anger, that we take malice, and we take this into our own hands to try to solve something, it never works out. How many wars have we gone to? Forget just gang wars and gang violence. How many national wars, nation against nation? How many of those have turned out the way we thought they would? Now, I'm not saying that there shouldn't be consequences for actions. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying if we're doing it from the standpoint of just getting back at someone, we fall into a trap. You know, just like there is a real God, there is a real devil. And it amazes me how many people don't like to hear that. We can question, well, is there a God, all day long? And people just are not moved by that for whatever reason. But they don't mind just saying, like, yeah, there's no devil. Well, how do you explain evil? I don't know. It's just a force. No, it's not. But when you take on this evil, because that's what this is, when you talk about vengeance, you're just taking on evil. So you're trying to repay evil for evil, expecting good. How does that work? It never works. Now, right now, even as I'm recording this podcast, we're in the middle of so much more going on. You've got the attack at the music festival in Israel. You have innocent people that have been murdered. Over 260 people murdered at this music festival, gunned down, innocent, unarmed people at a music festival. Not a gun show, at a music festival. And then you have a retaliation of sorts. And you now you have it is like, who's justifying who? We're going to bomb you. We're going to bomb you. We're going to shoot you. We're going to shoot you. Where do we get other than just more dead people? Now, I believe in nations' right and ability to defend themselves, but there's a difference between defense and retaliation. There's a difference of making a real assault and trying to solve something. And we've got to be able to stand up for that. And I'm not talking, okay, are you pro-Palestinian or pro-Israel? I mean, it comes back to this whole East Coast, West Coast, which are you? Like, it's a ridiculous question. Because God has a heart that everyone be saved, that everyone come to Him. Now, I understand that there are people in this world that are just say, not only do they say no, they do it in a way that there's no peace. There's not like, hey, we're going to live as neighbors. You believe what you believe, I'll believe what I'll believe, and we'll just live peaceably. There are people in this world that don't think that way. They think, if you don't believe the way I believe, I'm going to kill you. Now, people like that cannot be negotiated with. There is no negotiating with them. There is no living peaceably with them. So where does that bring us? Does that bring us full circle? That the ends justify the means? If I decide the ends justify the means, then I can kill you in the name of whatever I believe. I can kill you in the name of the gang I'm in. I can kill you in the name of my record company. I can kill you in the name of my local rap artist. I can kill you in the name of my nation. I can kill you in the name of my ideology. I'm not pinpointing all the solutions here, other than to say this. What we all need to turn to is not our politicians, not our governments. We need to turn to Jesus. There will never be peace outside of the Prince of Peace, ever. There will never be peace on earth while rejecting the peacemaker, Jesus, ever. And we're kidding ourselves if we think that is ever possible. We are always growing one step closer to death. For every step we take away from Jesus is one step closer to death, because He is the way, He is the truth, He is the life, and there is no way to the Heavenly Father outside of Him. It's not just about, hey, whatever God you want to serve, it'll all lead the same place. That is not true. That is not true. That is not true. But hey, our time is up for now. But you can follow us on Instagram at Unpolished Podcast for updates to the studio and further episodes to come. Until next time, we challenge you to discover, imagine, and go. Discover God's purpose for your life. Imagine beyond your circumstances and go be who God has called you to be.